Okay, we are back. It is 12:08, and you have it tuned to K-Hum, and I'm happy that joining me in the studio is Daniel Falk.
Hey, good to be here, Lindsay.
Yeah, thanks for coming in on a Sunday. I know sometimes Sundays are hard for people to get away, but I appreciate you coming all the way down to Ferndale.
Well, it was definitely exciting getting here. It was kind of like the election. There were storms and clouds and rain and hydroplaning, but, you know, I arrived into the sunshine, so it's a beautiful thing.
It is a beautiful thing. Did you see any rainbows on the way down here?
No, I didn't.
We saw six this morning on our way down, which I thought was... Our record is 13. We saw 13 one time leaving Ferndale and going up to Arcata.
Well, I think that's all some sort of assertion. You know, it's like nature rebelling against Trump's election and saying, hey, this is all about diversity. And so nature is saying, hey, we're a rainbow. And that's the message it's being.
Nature's bringing back the rainbow.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll go with that. So you're here to talk to us about the very mysterious thing called the Electoral College.
And it's not a rainbow institution.
It is not.
That's for sure. Yeah. You know, when November 8th happened, you had this narrative, and it was from Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Barack Obama, the mainstream media. Everybody said the same thing. You know, wow, how shocking, Donald Trump won the election. Donald Trump did not win any election. Donald Trump has not won, you know, anything at this point except electors to the Electoral College. The only person that won on November 8th was Hillary Clinton. And it's amazing how many people pick up the narrative that Trump won when Hillary Clinton not only won the popular vote on November 8th, but her victory is growing every single day as they count more and more votes. It's up to almost a million more votes than Donald Trump got. The only election that's happened is the popular vote. The popular vote is to elect electors. And the election of the president, and this is another thing, the election of the president does not happen until December 19th. People don't understand. The election of the president doesn't happen until December 19th, but it does not happen until December 19th.
And the people who are going to be electing the president on December 19th are members of the Electoral College.
Yes. You know, those words are sort of, you know, there's two. There's electors and there's college. And as we look at these two words, we can kind of understand or think about what this institution is. So, first of all, you know, most people in the United States think of ourselves as a democracy. We try and promote ourselves to the rest of the world as a democracy. We are the largest democracy in the world. Actually, the largest democracy in the world is India. But we promote ourselves as a democratic nation, but we're not a democracy. And the Electoral College, from the beginning, was an anti-democratic institution. In other words, when the people got together behind closed doors, in secrecy, without the media there, and no transparency, in the summer of 1787 to overthrow the government of the United States. That's what it was, as a coup d'etat, called the Constitutional Convention, but as a coup d'etat. It happened behind closed doors, didn't follow the law of the land, which was Articles of Confederation. They set out to stop democracy from happening. Elbridge Gerry of Massachusetts said, "The evils we suffer are caused by an excess of democracy." And Robert Sherman, he was another one of the people at this convention, said, "The people should have as little to do as may be about the government of the country." So you have these two ideas that are dominating this secret group of people in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787. What can we do to get rid of democracy? And how can we make sure the people don't have a say? And they, you know, Hamilton proposed a constitutional monarch. Oh, that certainly, they rejected that. That was like too much of a contradiction to the revolution. But they were trying to figure out, how do we create an executive that has very limited powers on one hand and isn't selected by the people? And originally these people sat down, and this is according to Madison's notes, by the way, and that's the only source of information we have. And recent scholarship shows that he actually changed the history of the convention, so we don't know what happened. But originally, something like the Electoral College was proposed. It was rejected. It was rejected by the delegates at the Constitutional Convention. But after all these other compromises they made, they had no way that they could elect the president of the United States that they could approve of. And it was like an afterthought, or it was like, okay, that's the best we can do. So the Electoral College came into existence not in the deliberative process that maybe other parts of the Constitution came into existence, but it came in sort of as, well, we can't figure out anything else, so we're going to create this institution. All right, so the institution is made up of electors. And stop me if I'm not making sense or any clarity.
Well, I mean, there are. So I put it out to several people. I put it out on social media, and we put it on the KHUM page, and just kind of, you know, getting a broad scope of what people's questions about the Electoral College are. And I feel like one of the questions is a really poignant one to ask right now, and that is, who are the electors that make up the Electoral College? What makes them qualified to be electors, and how do they become electors for the Electoral College?
These are such great questions, and you know, there's kind of the, what do I call it, the political science orthodoxy or civics orthodoxy that maybe people are taught in high school. And then there's this other reality. So when I said electors and college, so here's the official kind of statement. The Electoral College was set up because the people who are writing the Constitution didn't trust the general public. That's certainly true. They wanted to protect them. They say this over and over in Madison's notes. They wanted to protect themselves from the people. And this is the elite want to protect themselves from the people. And they want to create a way to do that. Now, they left it up to individual states. And this is very important. Each state gets to determine its method by which electors are chosen. They don't have to use a popular vote. And the popular vote is only a after effect after the electors of each, usually, like in California, the Democrats have a method of selecting electors. And their method of selecting electors in California, for instance, is different than how the Republicans select the electors in California. And then they put these slates of electors, Democratic electors and Republican electors, green electors, etc., on the ballot. People don't know this. They walk into the ballot booth and they vote for Hillary Rodham Clinton. They're not voting for Hillary Rodham Clinton. It's all a lie. It's just one big lie. They're voting for the slate of electors chosen by the Democratic Party that people do not know who these people are. If Hillary gets more votes than Trump in California, it can only be one more vote, by the way, and she could get like 33% of the vote, and Donald Trump could get 32.99%, and Hillary would get all 55 electors in California, all 55, all who have been chosen originally by the Democratic Party, and they would get to go to Sacramento. Now, you say, what are the qualifications? Well, generally speaking, they are people who are loyal to their party. They're party officials. They're people who work on campaigns. They're big donors. There's no like qualifications of intelligence, background, experience, history, or anything. It's just kind of a reward. And this is across the United States. It's rewards for being an activist in the Republican Party, the Democrat Party, the Green Party, or whatever. It's just a reward. You're on the slate of electors. Then you go to the state capitol. Now, here's where things get a little strange. Remember, when the original Constitution was written, and as it is today, nothing has been amended except for Amendment 12. I'll get to that. The electors are the same. It says electors will sit down in their state capitals, and they will choose who is the best person to be president of the United States. So you're choosing electors, if that's the way your state chooses to do it, you're choosing electors to go to the state capitol and on December 19th of this year, decide who's the best person to be president of the United States. That is their constitutional responsibility. And that, according to Madison, was the whole intention, that these people weren't driven by passion, by faction, which would be parties, as George Washington announced them, by local interests. They would be thinking, the reason it's called a college, these people would be thinking deep and wide and wise about what was in the interest of the country. And, you know, Hamilton even argues that the institution is designed to stop a demagogue, like Trump from being elected. That is the purpose. Wise people get together, have a discussion about who's in the best interest of the country, and they cast a vote. Now, that is what Madison's notes show, was the conversation that happened in the convention. That was the arguments made in the Federalist Papers. But the institution has become sort of a rubber stamp in practice. But in reality, the Constitution and the people who wrote it were very clear. We don't want the people making the decision. They might elect a demagogue. We want this small group of people, it's truly an oligarchy, right? 538 votes out of 300 million people. We want a small group of people to take the time to make a wise decision about what's in the best interest of our country. So you have this conflict between intention and tradition, between what was supposed to happen as a check sort of on the despotic tendencies of the elite and the sort of the masses, you know, in this institution, and then what has happened, you know. So people have come to think of the Electoral College sort of as just a rubber stamp for the popular vote, but both in 2000 and today, we see that's certainly not the case. Popular vote goes in one direction. Looks like the Electoral College will go in another direction. You know, maybe.
So, yeah, I feel like when I was coming up and learning about the Electoral College, that something that was taught to me in, like, my civics class was that the Electoral College was supposed to be kind of this catch-all, okay, kind of what you're describing, of if there were, for instance, someone who was going to be dangerous elected by the popular vote as president of the United States, and that was kind of the check system to keep that person from becoming the president. But then many of the people who were responding with questions to my initial question about the Electoral College were talking about the Electoral College's deep seated racist, it comes from a very racist place and comes from when slaves initially were getting 3/5 of a person's worth of a vote. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, first, let's get rid of the myth that this is a check on the popular vote. The U.S. Constitution has no popular vote for the president. There is no check. There is no popular vote. There is no direct election of the president. This is, you know, America is not a democracy like almost all other countries in the world directly elect their, you know, leader in some way or another. But the only thing the Constitution says is individual states will determine the method by which electors are chosen. That's it. So that's number one. Number two, yes, the people meeting in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787 were racist. 14 of the delegates to the Constitutional Convention were slave owners. Slavery is directly written into the U.S. Constitution. Article 1, Section 2, Paragraph 3 says representatives in direct taxes will be allocated among the states according to the whole number of free people, including those serving a term of years, that's indentured servants, not counting Indians, and 3/5 of all other people. Well, that 3/5 clause means that states in the South that were slave-owning states got representation both in the House of Representation based... Now, think about this for a second. If you own slaves, if you own 50,000 slaves, you got your own personal congressperson. That's written into the Constitution. So one white slave owner with 50,000 slaves gets their own private individual congressperson. If you're a free person among other free people, you get 1/30,000th of a congressperson. This persists into the current Electoral College system. I'll get to that in a second. But we were rewarding slave owners in states with political power, both in the House of Representatives and in the Electoral College. So when people say the roots of the Electoral College are in racism, they're talking about the allocation of representation. The allocation of representation in a state is based upon how many congresspeople you have and how many senators you have. So a state with a large slave population counting those slaves as three-fifths of a person, allocates Congress people to that state based upon the number of slaves they have, directly rooted in the institution of slavery and rewarding slavery, both in the House and in the Electoral College. So yes. Now, today, that racism has kind of morphed into the most rural states with the lowest population of minorities and the highest population of white people. That's the Midwest. That's places like Wyoming and Montana and North Dakota and South Dakota and Nebraska. Those states have a much higher white population than minority population, and they have a greater proportionate representation in the Electoral College. So you have a disproportionate representation of white people. So it continues as a racist institution. I don't know if that's completely clear to people or not, what I'm saying.
I'm following it a little bit. You know, I think because I tried to do my research before I met with you. I knew that you were going to have a much clearer, definitely deeper understanding of the Electoral College. But there are like maps and charts floating around on the internet where you can see, you know, one of the state that has the most value if you're voting in that state, because no matter what, each state gets two senators, right?
Every state gets two senators. So the comparison, Wyoming, 500,000 people. Two senators, and every state's guaranteed at least one congressperson.
Right.
So California's got 37 million people, and it gets two senators. So that means that Wyoming gets three electoral votes. Now, we get 55 in California, but the difference is they get almost 300% greater representation per person than California is. 300%, and almost all of them are white.
It's pretty wild when you look at those statistics of the states that are obviously the most populated states, and many of the states that are the most, I would say, diverse states.
Yeah, definitely diverse. Yeah.
The vote, how it gets squished down via the Electoral College, their vote counts as way less. I think the extreme measure is looking at California and then looking at Wyoming, or looking at someplace like the District of Columbia as well, because they also get.
Well, it's funny because the District of Columbia is overwhelmingly African American. It was finally in 1964, I think that was the year, it was given three electoral votes. It didn't have any before there. Its population is greater than that of Wyoming. You can see the disparity, and it's almost a continuation of, you know, if you look at, you know, you got slavery, three-fifths of a person, then you have the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, and you're supposed to be, you know, counted as equals. John Lewis, who was a famous civil rights activist, and was talking on NPR yesterday about growing up in a county in Alabama that was 80% African-American, and not one African-American could vote. So you think about this legacy and this history. First, slaves, of course, couldn't vote. They were counted as three-fifths of a person to allow white slave owners with more power. After slavery, you had, of course, grandfather clauses that prevented African-Americans from voting at all. Then after that, you have, you know, institutionalized segregation, and then you have the war on drugs, mass incarceration of African-Americans, so that once they are arrested for a crime that all these people in Southern Humboldt are doing and get to vote, if you're black and you're arrested in the South and you're charged with a felony for like an ounce of marijuana, places like Alabama, you're a felon. You can't vote. So there's this systematic 200-year history of, you know, preventing African-Americans from voting. And then when the African-Americans live in places like New York, California, in some cases, in comparison to predominantly white states, they're down to like, you know, 50% of a person in terms of their participation in the system. So the racism that was, was institutionalized into the Constitution continues to this day.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Okay. I think it makes sense. I don't know. I'm following what you're saying, and I think many people are following too. I don't see us like losing anyone on the stream or anything. Okay. So that's a good sign. And if you do have any questions, you can email me. I'm not taking any phone calls, but you could email me studio@khum.com, and we'll make sure to ask those questions. I'm going to go right down the line, and because there were. I was impressed at how many people were curious about the Electoral College and had so many questions about it. So it being up to all the different states to kind of decide what the process is for choosing electors and how, I mean, the electors are, can you explain how the electors are assigned per state?
Well, here's, every state gets one elector for every congressperson they have. So California has 53 congresspeople. That's based on population, except that every state is guaranteed at least one congressperson. And then you get an elector for every senator. So every state is guaranteed a minimum of three. California, 53 congresspeople, two senators, 55 electoral votes. So that's every state. Now, like, when people ask, how are these people selected? Every single state gets to determine the method. And then if you look at California, you can actually go to California's Secretary of State, great source of information, and just go Electoral College. And it's surprising, even in California, even though the state gets to determine the method by which electors are chosen, individual parties get to determine the electoral slate themselves by their own method. So actually, the Democratic Party has a method, the Republican Party has a method, the Greens have a method. Every party gets to determine by itself how it selects its electors that are going to go before the voters on November 8th. So, and think about that. That's just in California. We have five different methods of selection based upon party. The voters get to choose the electors that will go on December 19th to vote. But every other state gets a different method. And this goes back to 2000. Because the Constitution says that every state gets to determine the method. Remember the vote count when Gore and Bush were in this contest. And I want to talk about this in a second. But when they were in this contest and the Gore campaign wanted a recount because of the butterfly ballot in Broward County. And it was eventually blocked by the Supreme Court. One of the ways that they were going to get around this was the Republican legislature was going to just on its own, which was within their constitutional rights, to determine that the Republican slate of electors were chosen. So remember, a state gets to determine the method by which electors are chosen. That's done by the state legislature. They can completely go around any popular vote at all. And they were actually going to do that. And then the Supreme Court intervened and said, no, you can't count those votes, and, you know, made Bush president, even though he lost the, quote, popular vote. Let's see. Did that answer your question? It's a very, every state does it in a different way. Yeah. And every party within a state may do it a different way. In California, it's completely esoteric. Every single party comes up with its own method.
One of the questions that was proposed was, what if any, do the Electoral College and the electors that represent the Electoral College have to do with the primary process of electing the representatives in the Democratic or Republican primaries? The superdelegates.
Well, okay, there's the superdelegate within the Democratic Party. What happened was this guy, McGovern, was chosen to be the standard bearer for the Democratic Party against Richard Nixon. And after he lost, the Democratic Party decided to concentrate power in an elite. And they decided that, so these aren't the Republicans doing this, these are Democrats doing it. And of course, you saw this with the DNC's campaign against Bernie Sanders. They didn't want the people. They wanted the elite to decide who was going to be their standard bearer and lose. So they created this institution within the Democratic Party called superdelegates. And the superdelegates were elected officials, which the Democratic party thought was a check on the popular passions of the people, you know, the Bernie Sanders voters and the McGovern voters before that. They didn't want the people making a choice about who was the best candidate. So the superdelegates had the power of pledging before any popular vote to a particular candidate. So they pledged themselves to Hillary, for instance. Some pledged themselves to Bernie, but it wasn't based upon any popular vote. And it was kind of, once again, like the Electoral College has become, theoretically, a check upon the popular will of the people. So the Democrats are very much in this game of suppressing democracy. We read the WikiLeaks stories of the DNC, which is supposed to be neutral. We can see that they're just like the Federalists. They don't trust the people. They want to come up with institutions to prevent it. That's the superdelegates. Now, the relationship between the superdelegates and the electors, some of those superdelegates might also be in the slate of electors, and they might end up voting. But no congressperson or senator can be an elector. So you can't hold office and be an elect. You can't hold federal office and be an elector. You can hold federal office and be a superdelegate.
Okay, so it seems like that it's possible there's some kind of overlap from superdelegates and electors, or it's a similar pool of people that would be making these same decisions.
I think it's a very similar pool of people, and most importantly, from my framework, it's a similar thought process. It's the arrogance of the elite. It's that arrogant elite that says, we know better than you. That was who met in Philadelphia in the summer of 1787. That's who's in the DNC when they came up with superdelegates. That's the DNC that we saw in this last primary election. Always, we know better. And their knowing better got Hillary Clinton as their candidate, a person who probably created only marginally less outright hostility overall than Donald Trump. You know, I mean, that's...
I mean, it seems pretty universal in the scale of people that I was hearing. I know kind of here in Humboldt, it feels like we're in a bubble, sometimes a political bubble, but it felt like many of the people that were commenting on the election were saying that, you know, neither person was their ideal candidate.
Oh, no, this is universal. Even the people, if you go and look at the polls, and there's all different types of polls to look at. For instance, a lot of the Trump supporters... A great deal. Well, 70% were evangelical Christian. Secondly, a lot of race resentment was expressed, and they found a correlation of almost 70% of racial resentment. And what this racial resentment was among the rural white population that voted overwhelmingly for Trump was that they felt that minorities were getting more from the system than they were, and they were angry. There was a lot of race resentment, anger expressed by Trump supporters. But after the election, when they asked these same voters whether they thought Trump was a candidate you trusted, overwhelmingly, these people that voted for him, probably because he was going to protect their gun rights and maybe stop abortion in the Supreme Court through his appointments, these people did not trust, very low trust for Donald Trump, despite the impression these people do not trust Donald Trump. So, yeah, the negatives is what it's called. The negatives against both Donald Trump by both his voters and his opponents, extremely high, probably the highest of any president in recent history. So extremely high. I mean, maybe you could go back to Richard Nixon in 1972 and see negatives like that, but I don't even think so. So both the negatives against Hillary, the negatives against Trump were extremely high. The difference was the elite was extremely negative against Trump in the Republican Party, and the elite was very negative against Bernie in the Democratic Party.
Okay, I have another question, and I feel like this kind of moves to another sector of the conversation that I was hoping to have with you today, and I want to thank you again for coming in and talking to me.
Oh,
if
yeah.
You're just joining us...
I'm sorry if this is way too esoteric, and I'm trying to think in my head, how do I make this simple and clear, and I'm sorry if I'm not doing
I feel like you're making it
that.
Simple and clear, and again, I did notice people are calling in. I'm not answering the phone right now, but if you do want to comment or give some feedback or have a question, you can email me studio@khum.com. I will look at that, but I'm not putting anybody on the air right now. But I do have another question that came in from a friend, and He said he would like to hear some elaboration on this statement. And the statement is, in many states, electors can become faithless electors and switch their vote to any candidate that they wish. However, some states use laws or pledges to bind their electors to vote for a specific candidate. And the penalty for breaking this pledge isn't typically very severe, according to Inverse. The change is typically a misdemeanor and a fine of about $1,000. And then there are 15 states that don't bind their electors to a particular candidate. And those states being Georgia, Arizona, Arkansas, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Missouri, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, and Virginia. Can you elaborate on that statement, please?
So the Electoral College, like I said, you know, constitutionally, electors can be chosen any method. Through tradition now, they're chosen by the popular vote. To kind of reinforce the relationship between the people of the state and the electors, states have passed laws that bind the electors to the candidate that wins the popular vote in that state. So there are states that do this, and then there are 15 states that don't do this. That has been constitutionally challenged, and it's gone to the court. And the court has sort of said, yes, states can pass this legislation, but it doesn't, you know, you can impose a fine upon the electors, but the electors still have the freedom with the consequence. They have the freedom of not following the popular vote in their state. They have the freedom to vote for anybody they want. That is under federal law, and it's a federal institution. The states without any laws or legislation requiring it, the 15 that you mentioned, the electors can vote for anybody they want. And this opens up what we're trying to do here in Humboldt County. We are trying to lobby the electors to vote for a person who is not a demagogue. And there's, you know, ridiculous organizations like Move On that have petitions online. I'm going to put in parenthetical interpolation, stupid petitions online that are trying to convince electors to vote for Hillary Clinton. Look, Republican electors are never going to vote for Hillary Clinton. It's not going to happen. So don't waste your time. Don't sign that petition. Don't do it. It's a waste of time. Republican electors are going to vote for a Republican, but they don't have to vote for Donald Trump. He's scary. He's scary. I mean, Mitt Romney, after the election, said it's trickle-down racism. There are mainstream Republicans all over the United States that are terrified of what Donald Trump represents for the United States and for the Republican Party. I mean, we got a guy appointed to Attorney General that's supposed to enforce civil rights law who has basically said the KKK is fine except they smoke marijuana. I mean, this mainstream Republicans are very nervous. We saw this in the primary, very nervous. Well, Republican electors from states that voted for Republican electors can vote for any Republican that they want. So the smart thing to do is to lobby the electors in Republican states and say, please vote for Mitt Romney or John Kasich. Vote for Mitt Romney or John Kasich. Don't say vote for Hillary. It's never going to happen. It's a waste of your time. So if you want to do something productive, write a letter to the editor of a newspaper in one of those states and say, please vote for Mitt Romney and save our nation from this racist, sexist, sexual harasser being the symbol of the United States in the world. And you know, if we can get 50 Republicans to go, yeah, we don't want that to happen. On December 19th, we can prevent Donald Trump from being president. And I'm just amazed about the, you know, the transition team to racism and the transition team to Donald Trump. Why are we making Americans think this is a done deal when the deal is not done? When nobody has been elected president of the United States, that won't happen until December 19th. And mainstream Republicans can actually choose a person. They are completely responsible, by the way. They're completely responsible. They can choose a person that will save the Republican Party from the consequences of Donald Trump, and they can save America from the consequences. And they can do that on December 19th.
Okay, so you are putting together a movement, or you're helping people with kind of organizing and questions that they have about this movement. You've had some meetings, or at least one meeting, right, at the Labor Temple?
Yes. 1 week about after this. The election, people were, you know, in despair. A lot of people were, you know, in the streets, and they were protesting, mostly in the states that had voted for Hillary. If you really want to do direct action, if that's what you're interested in, you should probably head to the Republican states, to their capitals, on December 18th, and you should occupy the Electoral College. That's what you should do if you want to do direct action. I don't know why you're protesting in states that voted for Hillary Clinton and shutting down freeways in states that voted for Hillary Clinton. I mean, what's the symbolic significance of that? But anyway, people are really justifiably angry, frustrated, upset by the system. And I want to let people know, look, there are 538 people. Let's convince them to do the right thing. Let's convince them to save America from a racist demagogue. You can do that by lobbying your electors. And so people met last Tuesday. We formed groups to call electors, and people have been doing that. We formed groups to write letters to the editor in states that have Republican electors. We've done that. We have people who are networking with other groups. If you saw Time.com, they actually are running a story right now on Time.com by a person who's saying the Electoral College was designed to prevent demagogues, and Donald Trump is a demagogue. And so even the mainstream media, I mean, a little tiny bit of the mainstream media, is starting to pick up on this idea that, wow, the president hasn't been elected yet. There's Electoral College. Maybe we should actually ask these electors to do their constitutional duty and choose somebody best for America. That's their constitutional responsibility. Let's ask them to do it. And you know, so that's one thing. But the other thing is, I want Americans to understand, you have this institution standing between the popular vote and the election of the president. It's not legitimate, and it's racist. The only way we're going to get rid of it is if people are aware that it's there.
And so there was another question that kind of goes along those lines. And the question was, I believe it was, if there's Electoral College, then why do we even have the popular vote? And is there a way to switch from the Electoral College to a popular vote?
Oh, yeah. Boy, this is the real, this is the problem. So, to amend the Electoral College is written right into Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution, the way in which the president is selected. Because it's written in the Constitution, the only way you can change it is by amendment. An amendment to the Constitution, and I'm going to say this really slow, requires two-thirds of the House, two-thirds of the Senate, and three-quarters of the states. So if you look at the House, it's made up of Republicans that come from white states, large rural populations. You can't get two-thirds of those Republicans to vote for an amendment. And then if you got them, then you got the Senate with states like Wyoming having two senators. They love the disproportionate power that white rural states have, both in the Electoral College and in the Senate. And they love that. They're not gonna vote against their interest. And even if you got them to, and I don't know how you would, then the next step is you gotta pass it through three quarters of the state legislatures. And the legislatures are including the states that benefit from the disproportionate power that they have in the Electoral College. So can you get rid of it? No. It's not going to happen. It rewards racism with power. Why would racists get rid of an institution that rewards racist with power? No, it's not going to happen. The Democrats have to work twice as hard to win an election as the Republicans do. I mean, that's the reality. The Republicans control so many of the state legislatures. They've gerrymandered districts. Back in 2012, there were more Democrats that voted for Congress, for Democratic Congress people, than Republicans that voted for Republicans. And the Republicans won overwhelmingly because they gerrymandered their districts. So the election is rigged. The system is rigged. the parties of these rural and white states are overwhelmingly Republican. So changing this system through the Constitution, two-thirds, two-thirds, and three-quarters, I would say the hope for that is impossible.
Well, that sounds really pessimistic.
Yes. And so what can we do? We can use the institution, the rules we have, and lobby those
electors.
And lobby
the electors.
And I really think that we need to make these people feel extremely... my son has been calling the electors directly. We need to put the pressure on them. We need to let them know that we know what they're going to do, and we need to hold them accountable. Every one of these people, we need to bring up in the public eye and say, this person right here voted for a racist. This person right here voted for a person who... proclaimed that he had the right to sexually assault women, and this person voted for him. And we need to hold them, the 538 people that actually are responsible, we need to hold them accountable for the decision they're making, both before December 19th and after December 19th. We need to make it very clear, these people elected this person, and we need to make that public, and we make it publicly accountable. And maybe these people, knowing that they're going to be held publicly accountable, might think about the consequences of their choices and what that means.
How do you find these people? How do you know who they are specifically? And it looks like there's these specific states, right?
Yes.
That you guys are focusing on right now with the people that you met with at the Labor Temple.
Yes.
How do you find their information? Is it public information?
It's all public. It's all every Secretary of State in every single state in. Every state in the United States, the person responsible for elections and the process of choosing electors is the Secretary of State. You can go to the Secretary of State. This is a difficult way. You can go to the Secretary of State and ask who the electors are. I did have a link that had by every state, every single person by state, and I had that, but for some reason, it's not working. But Flip the Vote has a spreadsheet, and it lists every elector in the United States. There's another group also listed that has, you can email every single elector in the United States by going to one of my links that is on Lindsay's Facebook page for this program, and or it will be eventually.
I can put it on there.
Anyway,
I don't know what such link you're speaking of, but I'm into checking out.
Yeah, we'll do that after the show. But there is a link where you can just, in 1 minute, you can just go, you can send an email to all the electors, all 538, that says, vote for Trump. You know, that can be the heading, and go, don't elect a demagogue, or we're going to hold you accountable, you know. So that's really easy. It takes 1 minute to do that. So instead of maybe marching down 101 and blocking traffic in Oakland, maybe, you know, you could send an email, and then, you know, you can join a caravan and go to a Republican capital like in Utah and, you know, surround the Capitol and have a protest there and do a direct action against these Republican electors, you know, bring attention and pressure on them directly.
Well, that all sounds very, I mean, it sounds, to, I hate to be pessimistic.
What? Pessimistic? Donald Trump?
yeah, I don't know. It all sounds like it's a long shot, but it's totally the only thing that feels like it will make a change.
Well, here's right? the thing. If you can't change, if we can't amend the Electoral College, let's take it. Let's be realistic. Basically, these are the rules of the system. The rules are the Electoral College. If it's not going to be changed, then let's integrate that into our political process and say, wow, we have a month to influence these people. We have a month to bring pressure on these people. I mean, I think a bulletin board in every single Republican state capital showing the popular vote for Hillary versus the popular vote for Trump, and then the quote from Donald Trump. What does Donald Trump say in 2012 when he thought Romney was going to win the popular vote? The Electoral College is a disaster for democracy. This is a direct quote from the person who supposedly is going to be elected. And he's already undermined that argument by all of his supporters go, oh, it's a republic. No, no. He himself, out of his own mouth, out of his double-speaking, spewing mouth, has come the statement on his Twitter feed that the Electoral College is a disaster. Yes, disaster for democracy. That needs to be put up on a billboard in every single Republican capital in the United States. It needs to be left up. And then we need a list under that. After the Electoral College votes, we need a list of every single elector that voted for the demagogue. This person voted for a man who claimed to sexually assault women. That's what we need. And we need to list it because many of these people claim to be evangelical Christians and they're endorsing sexual harassment of women. His attorney general has said grabbing a woman is not sexual assault. That's his new proposed attorney general. We need to put that up on a bulletin board in every single capital and hold these people accountable for what they're doing. Now that will change the whole dialogue about the Electoral College.
Well, I appreciate you again coming in here and talking with us. I always, of all people to talk politics with, you're definitely the most interesting person that I get to talk politics with.
Oh, I love being here, Lindsay.
Yes, and and I do miss our more frequent political conversation. And I appreciate you coming in, kind of like making it simple for us to understand something that is very complex. I mean, the Electoral College is super complex.
And it sounds like esoteric that people don't understand what they're doing in November, what's happening in December. They don't know the president hasn't been elected. And when you're bombarded with the media telling you Trump is the president-elect, how are you going to understand that he's not? No one's voted for him yet.
Right. And it sounds like, I mean, it sounds like something that if we want to continue, I feel like there is a lot of energy right now that's been sparked with what's going on politically, with especially in Humboldt, I feel it with what happened with Bernie and the DNC, and then what's happened now with Hillary and the popular vote. And a lot of people are feeling this energy, and it's not necessarily the best energy. So if we can figure a way to channel that into maybe understanding our political climate a little bit better and understanding institutions like the Electoral College, and then figuring out how, like you said, how to work with these things that exist, that it's easier for us to understand this very complex thing that has been put in the place of democracy and use that to work for us than to try to go against it and change it. So,
I want people to have hope. This election created an immense amount of despair in me. I have to admit, I mean, I was incredibly depressed. I haven't slept. I wake up thinking about what this means for women, what this means for people of color, what this means for, you know, the vice president, just to go on to that. The only change to the Electoral College, by the way, was Amendment 12, which said there'd be separate votes for the president and the vice president. The way it was originally written, the person with the most electoral votes became president, second most became vice president. That would be Trump and Hillary. But Pence is almost more terrifying than Trump. I mean, he's a person that passed a law to make it a punishable crime for a gay couple to request a marriage license. He wants to punish women who have abortions. I mean, this guy he's terrifying in terms of his actual agenda. So, you know, we have two people that are terrifying right now. And of course, the Attorney General Sessions is terrifying. So with all that coming at us, we can either be in a state of despair, and despair is almost incapacitating, or we can say, what can we do about this? And that is capacitating. In other words, if we act, and we act in an effective manner, whether we win or lose, it doesn't matter. Struggles, I mean, look at FARC in Colombia, 50 years of struggle, you know. Look at the bus boycotts and you know, that were carried out by the civil rights movement. They walked instead of riding the bus for a year in the South, for a year. So if we think about it, 4 years struggle, 4 years where we become more effective and more sophisticated, and we become a grassroots movement where we can rise up and we can bring about change. Our hope, we can keep this hope alive, and that's what I want. I want to keep hope alive. I don't want us to give up. I don't want us to give in. I want us to keep fighting, and we can do it if we use the most effective methods, and we figure out how to get better at it.
So this kind of, this might seem like it has nothing to do with what you're just saying, but I've been watching, when I get stressed out, sometimes I revert to binge watching MacGyver.
Yeah, exactly.
And I feel like we really got to MacGyver this situation. You know, it's like we can't really get rid of the Electoral College, and we just kind of, you know, we got to use the tools that we have available to really understand and work with it. And I appreciate you coming in and explaining things a little bit better. You do have a few resources. Is it okay if we give out your contact, like your email or something like that?
People can, Falk, F-A-U-L-K, at hotmail.com. F-A-U-L-K. That's all lowercase, at hotmail.com. You can email me and ask me questions. I will try and answer them. I have 300 students I also respond to. Nonetheless, you ask me, I will try to get you that information.
Okay, and we'll be putting up some resources as well, like that list of the electors that are able to vote for whomever they choose and are part of...
And really, honestly, all electors under the U.S. Constitution can vote for whoever they choose.
It just might be
a fine
of $1,000.
Yeah, and you think, okay, so that's $538,000, right? Look at how much they spent. We could ask somebody like Steyer, give me $538,000 to pay the fines of all the electors who actually did their constitutional duty. And I think that Americans would thank us for spending that money.
Cool. Well, thank you again, Dan Falk, for coming in and talking to us. I'm going to go ahead and take a break, and we'll be back with some more music, and I will be posting up this conversation if you're just tuning in. It will be available sometime around 2 o'clock-ish, as soon as I can get that together, at khum.com, and we'll have some of the resources that Dan was talking about a little bit earlier as well.